lovers around the world. Elisa Schone welcomes you to the Food Files. In this program, we'll uncover tales and stories from the world of Italian food with students and staff of the Umbra Institute, a study abroad program in the beautiful town of Perugia. Each month, we'll walk together through Perugia's ancient alleys and picturesque countryside. Follow us to discover food and sustainability of the beaten track. This first episode is about local gardens that we'll visit with Cindy Bauer. We'll have dinner with Roxana Carcamo at Nadir, a sustainable restaurant in the center of Perugia. We'll then cook dinner together and prepare a perfect vegetable minestrone soup with Caitlin Orrock. And have you ever wondered what nuts got to do with going nuts? Marco Bagli and Kat Tartaglia will spice up our English by talking about the symbolic meaning of the word nuts. Stay with us to discover what food in Perugia really means.
In this episode, we are going to explore urban agriculture in the enchanting city of Perugia. We will figure out if urban agriculture can help provide people fresher food, improve the quality of life, and help create a more sustainable city. We have defined urban agriculture as growing fruits, herbs, and vegetables. It can also include raising animals in cities. Urban agriculture requires a lot of innovation. It also needs a lot of dedication and creativity to really work. However, urban agriculture can be a major asset to city life. Some of the benefits of urban agriculture include improved nutritional health, new opportunities for income, hands-on educational experiences, and the strengthening of community. Urban agriculture has begun to appear in modern cities all around the world. However, I would like to note that urban agriculture alone cannot sustain an entire large city. Regardless, it can have a tremendous impact and should be considered by urban planners. In the global north, urban agriculture can be used for educational purposes to create greener cities and foster communities. In the global south, urban agriculture can be used to help people meet daily food needs. A real-life example of urban agriculture is Greens Grow Farms in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the United States. Greens Grow is in a lower-income part of Philadelphia. It consists of a city block of green space used to grow both vegetables and flowers. Everything grown at Greens Grow is sold to the public daily. Greens Grow also has a refrigerated section of local meats and other natural food products. The meats are all grass-fed and organic. Urban agriculture in this area has helped bring new life to an otherwise withering community. Spaces such as Greens Grow are living proof of the advantages of urban agriculture that can be incorporated into any city. It may not seem like urban agriculture can be applied everywhere. However, even here on the rocky hill that is Perugia, a garden makes a huge difference. The few examples of urban agriculture that exist in Perugia are quite innovative. They may even pave the way for more to appear.
Minestrone, la cioccolata e insalata, il baccalà, il parmigiano, lo zafferano, la mozzarella e la cannella, la pasta al pesto, il pollo arrosto, il baccalà. Non c'era proprio più niente da desiderare, erano tre giorni che stavamo a preparare le due valigie, tre pacchi, la borsa, il cestino con mamma. E la frittata, i formaggini, i fagiolini, la frutta cotta e la ricotta, il baccalà. We'll be right back. siamo scappati coi pacchi, la borsa, il cestino e con mamma siamo tornati a mangiare in città i panini, il gelato, le bistecche, il pesto, il baccalà, la minestra, la frutta, l'insalata, il pollo, il baccalà, le lumache, la pasta, il formaggio, il brodo, il baccalà.
When you walk through the medieval city of Perugia, you sometimes feel like you're wandering through miles of cold stone. However, if you find yourself on Via San Giacomo, you may discover something special behind a large wooden door. Look for a sign that says, "Baldino's garden is the most beautiful in the whole neighborhood." If you can find this unique door, you will be transported to a secret garden of sorts. Walking up the steps, you are taken to a green oasis. It is a true gem hidden within Perugia's walls. It is the proud establishment of Ubaldo, who has worked on this labor of love for several years. Rows of green, leafy vegetables like arugula, spinach, and other lettuces are the first to greet you. But there's much more going on here than meets the eye. The garden follows a traditional terrace style. Every space is filled with various plants, and green shoots stick out of an assortment of pots, planters, and even an old bathtub. Climbing plants scale trellises and walls. There are various trees containing fruits like persimmons and oranges. You can also find a now dormant walnut tree that will soon provide pounds of nuts for people to enjoy. Ubaldo's combination of planting strategies is what allows him to use the land so efficiently. If you listen closely, you can also hear the other residents of Ubaldo's farm. Little bawks and squawks and tiny munching noises let you know that the chickens and rabbits are ready to greet eager customers. Right now, Ubaldo has about 5 or 6 customers a day. These limited numbers don't provide a lot of profit for the hardworking Ubaldo. However, that's not what keeps him and his family going. What keeps Ubaldo running this garden is the knowledge of farming and the pride of well-enjoyed food. The secret to Ubaldo's garden is that he has made the space extremely efficient and sustainable. For example, a nearby bakery supplies stale bread for the animals to eat. In return, the animals provide fertilizer for the plants. The family's kitchen waste is also used to keep the soil fertile. Instead of using city water sources, the family collects rainwater to water the plants. Overall, the whole system runs like a well-oiled machine. The plants, animals, and humans work together to provide food for themselves and the community. Aldo's garden is a perfect example of a great achievement accomplished by a single person and his family. Planning a public urban garden, however, is a different matter. Perugia is currently taking on an urban garden project called Ortobello and Borgobello, a neighborhood in the city center. Here, citizens have formed an association to revitalize the streets and its surroundings with numerous activities. As a community, they've decided that a garden is a great opportunity to build relationships, trust, safety, and beauty. To make this project a success, urban planners, agronomists, local residents, and Italian and American students alike have come together. They've involved the entire community through this interactive planning approach. They believe it is important to hear everybody's voice and opinion. If the garden does not serve the right purposes, then it is a waste of time and resources. The community's input on these matters are crucial because they will be the ones taking care of the garden in the future. After many meetings in different locations, the group has decided that the garden must serve the purpose of beauty, functionality, and edibility with vegetables and fruits. The hardest part was deciding how the garden should look, and now people are taking action. They are exchanging seeds, scouting locations, and sharing their knowledge of farming and gardening. Positive outcomes will surely arrive. The neighborhood will become more united, and more eyes will be on the streets to protect them from crime. In addition, the space will look more beautiful, and many people will have fun while doing this. Urban gardens are a new way to grow communities and not just food. They start from what we all have in common, eating. This is why we decided to look behind the scenes, asking Ray Lorenzo and Viviana Lorenzo, urban planners and professors at the Umbra Institute, what the goal behind this project is.
What is the goal of the Ortobello project?
Okay. Before going into the goals, I have to say that Ortobello is a continuation of the Carovicolo project, which wants to, intends to, and has changed public spaces, making them more vital, more beautiful, more livable through community participation and through the interaction of our students and people in the community. Ortobello is a spin-off from the project that began last year. Its objective or goals are to attempt to create the first, or maybe not the first, community garden in Perugia, in the Borgobello neighborhood. By that we mean a place where people can work together, growing things, and taking care of them. It may be a vegetable garden, it may be fruits and vegetables, it may be a seed place, it still is in evolution, but this term, our objective is to intervene in Via Fiorenzuola, in a small space in that street, which has already been greened a bit through the vertical gardens that we put in last year, to try to create the first sort of promotional or propaganda garden in which the students, together with community groups, will be able to do small interventions, sometimes of raised planters, create a way for watering, and make it primarily a place where people can learn together what the motivations and goals of community gardening are. You know.
Why is a community garden good for this neighborhood?
Well, community garden is good for all neighborhoods, but it would be good, and I think most of the students have said, and even the people in the community group, because first of all, because it brings people together, and it will allow them to get to know each other, to get to know where food comes from, how plants and nature should be cared for, and hopefully will, you know, bring the younger generation, even children, together with the elderly in the neighborhood to improve the quality of life.
Are you enjoying the experience so far?
Of course. What can I say? I always enjoy the experience. I enjoy this. I love this class.
What's your favorite part about it?
Meeting new students, seeing, hopefully, that they get excited about what we're doing, and eating in the neighborhood together. Unfortunately, we've canceled our appointment until after the spring break, but I'm kidding about that. But anyway.
More and more today, we have this term sustainability at the forefronts of our minds. Part of the importance we place on sustainability has to do with efficiency and innovation. I often find myself asking silly yet seemingly urgent questions. For example, what is the quickest way to get to work or school without using my car? Can I justify driving to the farmer's market to buy organic produce when I can walk to the regular grocery store? And how the heck do I repurpose this toilet paper roll into a trendy gift for my sister? These are all questions that pop up and must be dealt with, at least in my life. There's another part of sustainability that most people overlook, and it has to do with sustenance. Part of the human condition is that we must physically nourish ourselves, but we also need nourishment for the soul. In other words, we need good food that feels good to eat. There are many ways of going about it, but food choice can also cause a new set of dilemmas. It seems like all everybody can talk about is local versus organic. And then there's our awareness of seasonality battling those cravings you get in the grocery store. Like when you accidentally make eye contact with those perfectly ripe-looking strawberries in the next aisle and you just can't resist. Ironically, by focusing on efficiency, we have become increasingly disconnected from our communities. It has become easy to isolate oneself in our self-imposed concrete jungle. Urban agriculture is one way to fix this. It is one bridge that connects us back to the lush landscape and to each other. Urban gardens are also special because they are a source of physical, mental, and social healing. It is in these spaces that plants, animals, and humans come together in unexpected ways. And the amazing thing is, this connection can be made regardless of location. Just in this podcast, we've seen it happen in Italy and Perugia, and in the U.S. in Philadelphia. There are really no limits to how far we can take urban agriculture. Urban gardens would not exist without the dedicated people who have chosen to start them. In the process of making this podcast, we have discovered that the people who create these urban oases must be innovative and forward-thinking. They must deal with the challenge of space and place as they transform a pile of dirt into a productive tangle of plants and animals. They must also be willing to follow a true passion for life in order to be successful. Urban gardeners like Ubaldo and the creators of Orto Bello know that being able to sustain a community is a very powerful thing. And it is these people who know that urban agriculture is one of many paths to la vita bella.
Everyone, today I'm going to chat a little bit about the restaurant Nadir, a gem with a true purpose hidden in the city of Perugia. It took us a while to find it, for as this restaurant clearly defines the phrase, hole in the wall. But once found, we encountered a very different atmosphere and philosophy than most restaurants in Perugia. The sign found outside with the letters N-A-D-I-R is very appealing and peculiar. It gives a hint to the type of environment found inside. As you walk in, you find a big, interesting contraption in the entrance, which looks to be an old video camera. To your right, you will find a bookshelf filled with old knickknacks like kitchen utensils, electronics, and of course, books. The bright yellow walls and paint-splattered chairs found in the restaurant has a spunky yet relaxing and inviting aura. However, don't let this restaurant's hippie appearance fool you. I can assure you that behind the glass of the visible kitchen, there are many secrets to be discovered. Because of its philosophy, Nadir has many missions. Supporting their local economy is one of them, as they buy all of their ingredients fresh from local vendors. Also, they try to reduce their impact on the environment by only supporting farmers whose land and animals are farmed and cultivated using sustainable methods of agriculture. So not only can you feel good about the food you are eating here, but also enjoy the local taste of Umbrian cuisine in every bite. During our visit to Nadir, we tried a variety of different plates. Nadir's menu changes constantly according to seasonal fruits and vegetables. The chef also likes to keep the menu fresh and innovative with different dishes. That night, I personally had the baked polenta with ragu. It was extremely delicious. I enjoyed the warm, creamy texture of the polenta, and the ragu crumbled on top added heartiness and consistency to the mixture. Another special dish we tried from this restaurant is the hamburger di chianina. Chianina, the beef used, is a local varietal from the region of Umbria. And you have to believe when I say that the ketchup and mayonnaise on this burger were both made from scratch. It was so good. So, this is definitely the place to dine if you want a unique, flavorful local hamburger. As for wine, Nadir offers a variety of different wines known for their sustainable methods of production. We enjoyed a local Umbrian wine that night. For dessert, we had a delicious baked cheesecake with frutti di bosco. It was the perfect sweet ending to the delightful dinner. Nadir, with its interesting atmosphere and innovative dishes, has many positive things to offer the city of Perugia. Its effort to provide good quality food while preserving its impact on the environment shows that Nadir is a restaurant with a greater vision for how our food is gathered, cooked, and served.
Allora, questo ristorante nasce così perché per quello che mi riguarda è sempre il luogo che ispira qualcosa. Allora, io ero amica di Riccardo e lui mi ha fatto, sono andata al cinema e mi ha fatto vedere questo posto qua sotto e immediatamente ho associato il cibo al cinema, per cui gli ho detto: Riccardo, qua dobbiamo fare a cena col regista, perché per me il cibo è sempre un vettore di comunicazione, non è mai fine a se stesso, per cui quando il cibo serve per allargare la propria cultura, la propria conoscenza, lo stare insieme, il convivio, eccetera, eccetera, allora è lì il momento di poter intervenire. Così nasce questo posto.
Abbiamo visto sul sito web che sono elencati molti produttori da cui prendete gli ingredienti.
Sì.
E sono produttori locali?
Allora, sono produttori locali e una cosa che per me è molto importante, probabilmente non è che se voi venite tutte le sere qui mi trovate tutte le sere, di sicuro io vado sempre a fare la spesa. Questo per me è fondamentale perché io devo conoscere le persone che producono e devo vedere anche quello che producono di volta in volta, perché le materie non sono sempre le stesse, è sempre importante selezionarle, e questo rapporto personale di fiducia con i produttori per me è alla base, perché secondo me l'ingrediente più importante della cucina è proprio la materia prima, ed è proprio io non so, sono anche un po' spirituale forse in questo. Per me dietro una fetta di carne c'è un animale che ha vissuto, e secondo me quell'animale deve aver vissuto bene, quantomeno deve essere morto con minor sofferenza possibile. E la stessa cosa anche per le verdure. Per me è importante ricordarmi mentre cucino che ho una cosa preziosa fra le mani.
This was the voice of Francesca Taticchi, the chef of Nadir. She says, "It's always the place that gives you an inspiration. This restaurant is underneath a cinema, so I've had the idea of having dinners with directors. For me, food is a means of communication, and food is a way to explore your culture, to communicate, to be together. I only buy food from local producers. You might not find me here in the kitchen every day, but I surely always go shopping. I have to know personally the people behind the products. I also feel a bit spiritual. Behind a slice of meat, there is an animal, and its life. I have to be sure that they had a good life and death. It's the same for vegetables. I must remember that what I'm cooking and what I hold in my hands is precious." Lola, ho fatto le pazzie per te, ricordi che notti di follie, a Detroit, spaghetti, insalatina, una tazzina di caffè, a malapena riesco a mandar giù. La gente guarda e ride, non è stata insieme a noi a Detroit. Spaghetti, insalatina, una tazzina di caffè, a malapena riesco a mandar giù. La gente guarda e ride, ma non piange insieme a me per te. Lola, a Detroit.
Last week we decided to get together and cook a sustainable meal using ingredients from local farmers in Perugia. We decided to make a combination of ribollita and minestrone soup. Minestrone soup means big soup to Italians. It means a soup with lots of goodies in it, especially pasta, beans, and vegetables. The word, however, originated from minestra, which means to dish up or serve. Italians often eat a light soup as a first course, or a bigger soup as a light evening meal. Some of the earliest origins of minestrone soup predate the expansion of the Latin tribes of Rome into what became the Roman Republic and later the Roman Empire, when the local diet was vegetarian by necessity and consisted mostly of vegetables such as onions, lentils, cabbage, garlic, broad beans, mushrooms, carrots, asparagus, and turnips. There is no set recipe for minestrone since it is usually made out of whatever vegetables are in season. It can be vegetarian or contain meat and sometimes a meat-based broth, such as chicken stock. The recipe we use is from a local here in Perugia. Since she's been cooking for years, there weren't exact measurements or timing, so we just had to guess how much of each ingredient and keep checking on the soup to see if it was done. We went shopping for vegetables at the Covered Market, a place where local farmers have a stand every morning until noon. All the ingredients are very fresh and affordable. We got the dried beans from Bevichi on Via dei Priori and got our bread from a local bakery in town. So now, grab a pen. The ingredients for minestrone invernale, or winter minestrone, are onion, garlic, olive oil, Savoy cabbage or black cabbage, chard, celery stalks and leaves, carrots, a few mature tomatoes or tomato sauce, broloti or cannellini beans, water and organic stock, bread, and an egg for each person. The beans should be soaked for 12 hours and cooked for about 40 minutes before starting to cook. You want to start out by sautéing the onion and garlic with olive oil until they are translucent. Afterwards, finely chop the cabbage, chard, celery, carrots, and tomatoes and add them to the pan. Let it simmer for a while. Add the beans as well as the water and organic stock. We just used water and flavored it with salt and pepper since we wanted to keep everything fresh and natural. Cook for around 30 to 40 minutes. Within the last 5 minutes, crack an egg for each person and put it in the soup to poach. Close the lid and do not stir. Cut the bread into slices and toast it, then rub with raw garlic. When serving, place the bread in the bottom of the bowl and pour the soup on top. All of us were so excited to try the soup since we have never had it before. It smelled so amazing while it was cooking. All of us were so full after eating, and there was plenty left over for saving for the next day. The soup tasted very fresh, and it's perfect for the winter months because all of the vegetables are in season. All of us agreed that the garlic bread at the bottom added a ton of flavor, and it was a perfect addition to the soup. We give this recipe a 10 out of 10 and hope that you will be inspired to go out and try this Italian classic.
Well, can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. And we could pretend it all the time. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Just maybe like a ukulele, mama made a baby. Really don't mind the practice, cause you're my little lady. Lady, lady, love me, cause I love to lay you lazy. We could close the curtains, pretend like there's no world outside. Then we could pretend it all the time, Lord. And can't you see that it's just rain? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Can't you see, can't you see? Rain all day and I don't mind. But the telephone's singing, ringing, it's too early, don't pick it up. We don't need to, we got everything we need right here, and everything we need is enough. Just so easy when the whole world fits inside of your arms. Do we really need to pay attention to the alarm? Wake up slow, wake up slow. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you this song is meant to keep you from doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. And we could pretend it all the time, yeah. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Rain all day and I really, really, really don't mind. Can't you see, can't you see? We gotta wake up slow.
Hi, Hi everybody, this is Marco.
And I'm Kat.
And I work as a student services co-coordinator at the Umbra Institute in Perugia, Italy. And I'm also a PhD student in English linguistics at the University of Perugia.
And I work with Marco as a student services assistant and a librarian. In the Spice Up Your English section of this podcast, we'll be exploring the many and fascinating ways food has entered our everyday language, including the history and use of some popular idiomatic expressions that include food. This podcast is great for people who might be learning English as a second language or native speakers who just want to know more about the history of and etymology of English phrases.
So, today's podcast is about
nuts!
So, nuts is an umbrella term that defines a small dry fruit with a hard shell that grows on trees, bushes, etc. And since it is an umbrella term, it actually refers to many type of different fruits, such as...
For example, you have peanuts that make peanut butter, pine nuts, walnuts. Oh, we can't forget hazelnuts that make Nutella.
Yeah, God forbid.
Okay, so now that you have a literal definition of the word nut, let's explore its use in some metaphorical expressions. So one of the most popular uses of nuts in English idiomatic expressions is the phrase to be nuts, which means to be crazy or act in a bizarre or strange way. You can also drive someone nuts or be driven nuts yourself, which means to be pushed to the point of insanity by a situation or maybe even someone's behavior. For example, if you're in an office and the person at the desk next to you is constantly clicking their pen, you can say, "You're driving me nuts." There's also the phrase to be nuts about someone, which is, as Beyonce would say, to be crazy in love.
Yeah. So the same meaning in British English is given by the word nutter, and which means, again, to be crazy or act in a strange, bizarre way. And when many nutters gather, that would be called a nuttery. Conversely, in the US, the same meaning is given by the word nut house, which describes, of course, an asylum, but also it can refer metaphorically to a place where many strange and like mad and also funny people would gather.
So, for example, you could also use the term peanut gallery in the same way, and you could say, for example, our office at Umbra is a peanut gallery. It's a nut house.
Yeah, too. The word peanut, the expression peanut gallery, originated in the late 19th century, and it refers to the rearmost and the cheapest section of seats in the balcony or the uppermost gallery of a theater, and that's because peanuts were the food which was most commonly served in those areas of a theater.
So we also have the phrase tough nut to crack, which is used to describe someone who's really stubborn, set in their ways, and really strong with their beliefs. So it's almost like their brain itself has the hard shell of a nut, and you just can't penetrate it to change their mind about something or find out what they're really thinking.
Another way in which the word nuts is used is to refer to testicles. So that's why we have an English expression such as to bust someone nuts, as in, Kat, you bust my nuts. So that would mean that Kat is very annoying, critical of my behavior.
Hey!
And in general, you can obviously say that about anyone.
So you could say someone can't do something for nuts. So, for example, I can't sing for nuts, meaning I can't sing at all, or maybe someone can't ride a bike for nuts, they don't know how. If you're doing a job, you can be paid peanuts or do a job for peanuts, which means to receive a very small salary and get paid very little. So here, the small size of the nut is correlated with its value.
From here, we got the expression, if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
I mean, which is fine if you want monkeys.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, let's look at a very common expression that many English speakers as a second language may also know. I'm talking about the expression in a nutshell. This expression refers to when you're giving the description in a very concise and to the point and brief way. So it is basically the information boiled down to its simplest form. The first occurrence of this expression is to be found in Pliny the Elder, who in AD 77 wrote The Natural History. Interestingly enough, in his book, he uses this sentence in a literal way, because he reports that Cicero had seen a version of the Iliad written by Homer in such a small way that it could actually fit into a nutshell.
For the next occurrence of the phrase "in a nutshell" in world literature, we actually have to look to Shakespeare, who writes in Hamlet, "Oh God, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams."
To have the figurative use of the phrase "in a nutshell," though, we have to wait up until 1841 for William Makepeace Thackeray, who wrote, "Here, then, in a nutshell, you have the whole matter."
This has been the first episode of Spice Up Your English with Kat
and Marco,
broadcasting live from the Umbra Institute in Perugia, Italy. Write to us on Facebook with your comments and suggestions, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Our food adventures for today are over. Thank you for being with us. And thanks to the authors of today's podcast, Cindy Bauer, Roxana Carcamo, Christy Stringer, Anna Nimick, Caitlin Orrock, Carmen Tico, Marco Bagli, Catherine Tartaglia. A special thanks goes to Antonella Valoroso and Francesco Burzacca, curators of the program. The conversation continues on our Facebook page to keep feeding your body and soul. Until the next episode, a savory goodbye by Elisa Schone. Ciao!
Do that again.
Do 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 bo.
Did you overhear of a wish sandwich? Well, it's the kind of a sandwich that you're supposed to take. Two pieces of bread and wish you had some meat.
Do 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 bo.
The other day, I ate a ricochet biscuit. Well, it's the kind of a biscuit that's supposed to bounce off the wall back in your mouth. If it don't bounce back, you go hungry.
Do 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 bo.
The other day, I ate a cold water sandwich and a Sunday go to meat and bun.
Do 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 bo.
What you want for nothing? A rubber biscuit?
Do 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 bo.
Gow gow ooh.